Hello and welcome to On Sacred Ground on the LMC Radio Network on Blog Talk Radio, broadcasting the voices of the land and of the dead by weaving together history, ethnography, and spiritual experience. I'm your host, Kai Armand. If you're tuning in online and having technical issues, remember that you can listen to the show by calling in via your phone or Skype to 657-383-0525. That's 657-383-0525. To those of you who are listening live and are in the chat room at blogtalkradio.com, thank you so much for tuning in. Welcome. This is our 29th episode of On Sacred Ground, broadcasting live at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific on this Wednesday, November 25th, 2015. In this episode, we'll be discussing the heart, its power, its vulnerabilities, and the necessity of making it a priority. And today is a call-in show, so if you have any questions, comments, or would like to share some of your stories or ideas about the heart, some of your own experiences with the heart, please do call in at 657-383-0525. Before we get to our topic for the day, we're going to be doing a quick read, as we do every week, from the book Earth Prayers from Around the World, 365 Prayers, Poems, and Invocations from Honoring the Earth. And this reading today is an excerpt from an Ashanti prayer, which reads, "How strong and good and sure your earth smells, and everything that grows there. Bless us. Bless our land and people. Bless our forests with mahogany, wawa, and cacao. Bless our fields with cassava and peanuts. Bless the waters that flow through our land. Fill them with fish, and drive great schools of fish to our seacoast, so that the fishermen in their unsteady boats do not need to go out too far. Be with us in our countries, and in all Africa, and in the whole world. Prepare us for the service that we should render." That last line is a little intense there, especially considering today's talk. Prepare us for the service that we should render. It's been on my heart to discuss the heart on this show for a few weeks now, and it became even more present when I came across a recent article posted at Indian Country Today Media Network.com. That's Indian Country Today Media Network.com. And an article that was written by Jacqueline Keeler titled Thanksgiving, Hope, and the Hidden Heart of Evil. And in this article, this woman who is of both Dakota and Diné tribal heritage discusses her own celebration of the holiday of Thanksgiving and the meaning that she brings to it. It might be sort of an easy assumption that people who are of American Indian heritage would sort of, you know, on the whole, be against the holiday of Thanksgiving, given its actual and hidden history. I myself, just at a local cafe this morning, saw a young family come in, a man and his two children, and the family was Caucasian, and the little girl, adorable little girl, no older than 4 years old, had a headdress on, kind of like something obviously she made in school with feathers on it, and I felt myself go, just from the word isn't appropriation, really, in that context. The word is, again, it's, you know, it's really about hidden history. I know for myself, growing up in elementary school, I was not told that American Indian people were still living. I'm sure I myself made quote unquote, you know, American Indian style arts and crafts, the question of who is the Indian, who is the pilgrim? And, you know, for this girl, it was like a band of paper around her head with squares and circles, like, colored in, because, of course, indigenous people just like making simple geometric designs. Okay, you know what I'm getting at. Anyway, much love to her, much love to her family. But I say all this to say, given, again, the way, you know, the history of trauma that American Indian people have been put through, through colonization, and the ways in which that is obscured again and again in these ritualized actions that we as Americans participate in, such as Columbus Day and Thanksgiving, one would imagine that an American Indian person might not have too many great feelings about Thanksgiving. And I'm sure American Indian people, I'm sure a lot of them don't. Lots of people don't have great feelings about Thanksgiving. Lots of people of all ethnicities. But what Jacqueline Keeler in this article goes on to talk about is her celebration of this holiday, and that she doesn't celebrate it in a celebration of the, you know, mass lies and obscuration of history, but that she celebrates it as a celebration of her people's history, and just to it's a wonderful day to express gratitude. Obviously, every day is a great day to express gratitude, but hey, why not have a really special day to express gratitude? But she also celebrates it as a day in which her family survived what she calls the heart of evil. The heart of evil is what she believes really sort of started all of this mess. In this article, she sort of goes into discussing, you know, the exact and specifics of who was involved, where, whom, and when, that there, you know, were pilgrims who washed up and, you know, got to Plymouth Rock, and they were cared for by a Wampanoag man from the Wampanoag tribe, who was very, they were very hungry, and this man was named Squanto, and he had already traveled to Europe, and he knew English, so he was really in the perfect position to help these people whose English crops had failed, and that he and his people fed, you know, these pilgrims who had already been, you know, mostly decimated, through the winter, and taught them how to grow food, and really cared for them, seeing them as, you know what, these people are in a really bad situation. And she refers to her own father, who was of Dakota heritage, that his response when being asked to help would always be, are we not Dakota and alive? Are we? I love that so much. How powerful is that line when asked, being asked to give, or how much you have, are we not Dakota and alive? I mean, I can't say that I'm not Dakota, but am I not alive? Am I not alive if there is need? Am I not here and alive? And am I not human and alive, you know? So then she talks about how, you know, despite this generosity and care that was shown, the pilgrim's attitude is not that of, oh my God, these people have come and helped us, they're awesome, and this is so, you know, wonderful. But because they were not Christian, because they were quote-unquote heathens, the pilgrim attitude to these people who had saved them was, God has saved us through these heathens. And within about 20 years following this time, a tremendous amount of the Wampanoag people had been decimated, giving birth to what I believe is the original Thanksgiving, at which thanks was given for their decimation. So it is that worldview that Ms. Keeler in this article discusses calls the heart of evil. And she says that, I'm just going to quote right from it, she says, in stories told by the Dakota people, an evil person always keeps his or her heart in the secret place separate from the body. The hero must find that secret place and destroy the heart in order to stop the evil. I see in the first Thanksgiving story a hidden pilgrim heart. The story of that heart is the real tale that needs to be told. What did it hold? Bigotry, hatred, greed, self-righteousness. We have seen the evil that it caused in the 350 years since. Genocide, environmental devastation, poverty, world wars, racism. Where is the hero that will destroy that heart of evil? I believe it must be each of us. Indeed, when I give thanks this Thursday and I cook my native food, I will be thinking of this hidden heart and how my ancestors survived the evil it caused. Because if we can survive with our ability to share and to give intact, then the evil and the goodwill that met that Thanksgiving day in the hand of in the land of the Wampanoag will have come full circle, and the healing can begin. The heart is a really, really interesting place, so much so that it actually concerns me to even use the term heart, because in our world, it is a word that is really desecrated. It's almost like the word love. Once we talk about love, once we talk about the heart, both of these words are sort of considered so vague in our culture that a part of us just sort of shuts down and stops listening and sort of puts, you know, immediately begins filing whatever is being said or spoken about into nice, cute, quote, memeable things, memeable inspiration things, not this is deep wisdom that applies to my everyday life that I need to take action on. So I say that to also say maybe if you already find yourself in that place by me saying the word heart, maybe sort of be aware of that sort of cultural thing we do and take a second to deepen. It actually took me having some heart to do this show today, because there really are people who are far more well-versed in the topic of the heart than myself. And we'll be sharing some of those people's wisdom, the wisdom that they've received today. But I think this is, I mean, for one, I believe this is a hugely important topic, not only because I have to deal with the heart always in my practice as a contemporary shaman, as a spirit worker, etc., but because we are seeing issues regarding the heart every single day, but we don't recognize it. And we are a world that is embattled by issues and concerns and various tragedies and conditions. And we're looking for solutions. But I strongly believe that we are missing those solutions because of the category that we have put the heart in, that the heart is not a serious place, we've told ourselves. We said that the heart is a sort of a private thing, that the heart is not necessarily, does not have huge ramifications for, you know, not just our personal lives, but for the world at large, that each person's heart doesn't have huge ramifications. And also, you know, I guess it's really just the age of, you know, of reason, the age of reason and rationality. We really do live in a world that is all about rationality, and we feel that if something cannot be solved by new decisions being made, by having by creating new issues, new laws, new rules, by thinking about something differently, then it's not really an issue. And obviously, all of those terms I just used, decisions, rules, laws, thinking, these are all related not to the heart, but to the mind, as if the heart doesn't exist, as if the heart isn't an organ unto its own that drives our actions and that drives who we are in the world. I'm often thinking that we really live in a King of Swords world, the King of Swords being one of the cards in the traditional tarot. The traditional tarot sends you 8 cards, one of them, about 16 of them being of people. And the King of Swords card traditionally shows a man who has a bit of a wearied or wary look on his face and is holding a large sword while sitting on a throne. And when this card comes up in divination, it most often talks about decisions that are being made or people in authority, the idea of the rule of law, the hard, heavy hand, you know, cold law, all of that. And it's a world that we really live in, the King of Swords world. And if there aren't other modes of being that need to be brought into consideration, as if there aren't other ways of being that need to be brought into consideration, again, not just for our personal lives, but if we're going to heal and live rightly and maybe avoid some of the pitfalls that we keep finding ourselves falling into. For instance, right now the U.S. is dealing with an issue of divisiveness regarding Syrian refugees. Are we going to allow Syrian refugees into our country when we are very, very terrified of terrorism from Daesh, most commonly known as ISIS, but I prefer the term Daesh, that it's also known by this sort of radical militant Islamic, really it's not Islamic, it's a radical militant terrorist group, period, heavily active in Syria and the Middle East. And of course, we can counter this conversation that we're having right now about Syrian refugees with logic. In fact, I see people doing it all the time. People are really pulling out the history books and showing us how ridiculous this conversation is, that America is a nation heavily made up of immigrants, people who had nowhere to go and needed to find safety and well-being, and they got here. And we have the descendants of refugees. We have the descendants of refugees expressing the same qualms that Americans had about their own forefathers and mothers before here, and had those qualms and fears been taken fully seriously, then these new Americans, these refugee Americans, would not be here, benefiting from whatever America has to offer. So that's one. And really, if we're going to talk about, get really specific, an article's been going around talking about the very, very notable Anne Frank, author of the Diary of Anne Frank, who a young Jewish woman who died in the Holocaust, that she herself and her family were refused refugee status by the United States. Think of that. This young girl who for many of us, her writings, her adolescent writings, provide one of the first real personal glimpses that we get of the Holocaust and of Germany at that time, that she herself could have survived had she been given, had she and her family been given refugee status. So obviously, this conversation we're having about Syria, in some ways, we're already realizing it's, you know, illogical for these reasons. We're also realizing that it's illogical because the amount of Islamic, not Islamic terrorists, the amount of terrorists is minuscule. It's minuscule. I mean, like, minuscule, minuscule. And the people who are seeking refugee status are, on the whole, I mean, like, the vast, vast, vast majority, they are fleeing from terrorism. And yet another funny irony here is that here in the United States, we are about to celebrate Christmas. Christmas, and many of the people who are shouting down our taking in Middle Eastern refugees are at the exact same time putting up nativity scenes, celebrating the celebrating and representing Middle Eastern refugees, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. Literally, we have a holiday that is entirely around Middle Eastern refugees. And if we are going to consider tomorrow, Thanksgiving included, that day is also around refugees, refugees from Europe finding their way to the United States for safety. So obviously there is an lack of logic everywhere we're looking here. But there's also, and this is what we're not really talking about, because obviously we live in a world that is far more focused on, well, not even focused on history, but if we're going to argue, we just generally want to argue about historical facts, etc. There's obviously a huge amount of heartlessness involved in the situation. There's obviously a huge amount of heartlessness involved in everything that we're seeing today. And the more we say something is wrong, we need more laws, more rules, more strong-headed decisions, I believe that that same sword we're using is a sword that is backing us into a corner until we realize that what's really on at stake here is not about the mind. It's about the heart. It's about our hearts and whether or not we are heartless. Not just Americans, not just Daesh, not just Europe, but we as individuals, if we are heartless, and if we are heartless, as in if we are heartless today, as in are you heartless today? Are you heartless right now? Because if we are heartless, then what we can provide to our community is greatly decimated. And by our community, I mean our family, our local community, our global community. What can we give from a heartless place? In fact, we're always talking, you know, if we look at the idea of Scrooge, you know, the Christmas story around Scrooge is all about a heartless man who, because he is heartless, he cannot find it in him to give. And everyone in the, you know, at least in the Muppet Christmas Carol version, everyone's singing about how great it is to give and how it feels so good and how just starting by giving increases your having a heart. So today's show is focused very, very much on the heart, on the power of the heart, the need to make heart the primary, one of the primary conversations that we're having. Refocusing it as a priority in our world as part of the solution to some of the ills we're facing. And we'll be right back.
I am dejected. I am depressed, yet resurrected and sailing the crest by this elation mixed with deflation. What explanation? I am in love. Such conflicting questions rise round in my brain. Should I order cyanide or order champagne? Oh, why this sudden jolt? I feel like a frightened colt just hit by a thunderbolt. I am in love. I knew the odds were against me before. I had no flair for flaming desire. But since the gods gave me you to adore, I may lose, but I risk. Refuse to fight the fire. So come and enlighten my days and never depart. You only can brighten the flame that burns in my heart. For I am wildly in love with you, and of a stampede of love. So come and enlighten my days and never depart. You only can brighten the flame that burns in my heart. Of love, and so in need of a stampede of love.
We are back on Sacred Ground. I'm your host, Kai Armand, and today we are discussing the heart and the need to refocus the heart in our lives and in our world as a primary site of tending. And when I'm talking about the heart, obviously there are illnesses associated with the heart galore, from heart disease and cancers and so many other physical expressions of dis-ease in the heart and other places in the body. I'm not a medical professional, nor do I ever try to appear to be, and I'm also not an expert on medical diseases of the heart. However, we as humans have been aware of spiritual illnesses of the heart probably since the time we began making a connection with sacredness, probably since we began cultivating spiritual and sacred technologies. We've been aware of spiritual illnesses of the heart, that the heart is a place that is vulnerable, that it is both a muscle, like any other muscle in our body, that is being used all the time. And we are either caring for it and tending to it and honoring it and honoring what it does for us and for our communities, or we are finding it languishing and becoming misused and diseased. Really interesting, in the article I mentioned earlier by Jacqueline Keller at IndianCountryTodayMediaNetwork.com, the article titled Thanksgiving, Hope, and the Hidden Heart of Evil, she talks about a Dakota teaching, a Dakota American Indian teaching, which says that an evil person always keeps his or her heart in a secret place separate from the body. The hero must find that secret place and destroy the heart in order to stop the evil. And I find that it's so interesting, because what that actually is, actually it mirrors things we see elsewhere in the world. For instance, we have the condition that you find sort of originating in the Mediterranean, but then spreading throughout the world. Many spiritual cosmologies now hold the condition of the evil eye. The evil eye, you know, many spiritual technologies address this condition. And when someone is hit with the evil eye, they're finding that things in their life are withering, that there's almost like a drying up. In rural communities, it's almost like your cows get skinnier, your crops fail, the baby is skinny. All of the things that you want to be fat dry up. And if a person goes to a spirit worker or a diviner in one of these cultures or cosmologies, the diviner might see that the cause of this illness is not general bad luck, or that this person offended the gods or offended a spirit or something, or even that someone actively put a curse on them, but that the cause is sometimes the evil eye, literally that someone looked at them wrong, as we would say in sort of African-American vernacular, that someone actually, just based on having a jealousy in their heart and looking at that person or their home or their crops or their baby, they had a power, an unintentional power in them that struck this other person and caused this demise. And that condition, which is, again, unintentional, is known as the evil eye. And because of this condition, because we as humans know that someone can unintentionally harm us based on a look, we even have spiritual technology specifically related to it. Rue, for instance, is a very, very well-known plant for removing the effects of the evil eye. If you type in evil eye on Google, you'll find a tremendous host of spells from many different cultures regarding specifically removing the evil eye from a person, including a very well-known talisman. Not everyone knows what it is, but most people have seen it. It's called a Nazar. It is a blue, usually a blue glass bead or pendant with white or yellow and black in the center. Almost like a bullseye. It looks like an eye. And the Nazars, even though some people just call them evil eye pendants, are meant to ward off the evil eye, to keep one or one's home protected from the evil eye. But the evil eye not originate in the eyes. The evil eye originates in the heart, because we're talking about someone looking at you while holding in themselves a feeling of jealousy, a feeling of greed, a feeling of coveting that which you have. And here we have, even inactively, a muscle, almost like a twitch, simply just doing this thing and wreaking havoc. We see this fact that it's, you know, obviously it's just rooted in the heart just by understanding the causes of the evil eye, but there's actually a spell, a working, found in the Brazilian tradition of Kimbanda, the Afro-Brazilian tradition of Kimbanda that also blends into its European and sort of South American Indian lore and medicine. We find in the book Eshu by Nicolas de Matos Frisbald a working for removing the evil eye that is not about sort of just cleansing the person who's removed, who is affected, or putting up wards or protections against the evil eye, but a working that literally involves using something that is symbolic of a heart, doing that action, pretty much, that is being spoken about by in this Dakota teaching about an evil person keeping their hearts in a separate place and the hero needing to find that secret place and destroying the heart in order to stop the evil. And I just find it amazing that in that teaching we find a correlating working in the Brazilian tradition of Kimbanda that is literally taking that action, whether or not the Dakota mean it to be taken very literally. So, the heart. The heart is an area that can be poisoned. The heart is an area that can also contaminate others with its poison. And I think that that kind of contamination is what Jacqueline Keeler is talking about here, when she talks about the evil that that heart has caused over the past 350 years. Up till today, and unfortunately, this moment as well. So what I want to talk about is the heart and the way we understand it as humans, as laypersons, and as spirit workers. And one of the ways we miss an understanding about the heart is in our understanding, actually, of spiritual traditions and technologies in general. And here's where I'm really going to get myself into trouble. Where I'm going to get myself into trouble is verbs that we use about our work as for those of us or who know about spirit workers or practice spirit work of some form. We might call ourselves here in the New World witches, brujos, shamans, curanderos, healers, etc., etc. And we kind of think this is all the same thing. And it's not. And the reason why we don't understand why all of these things are not the same thing is because of this decentering of the heart. Because in many indigenous cosmologies, the heart is center, because nothing is, I mean, if we're talking about a people needing to survive, then nothing is going to be left out of our plan, of our strategy for how we're going to survive and sustain ourselves. Unlike us in the West, we're not going to allow some muscle, some extremely integral muscle that's always working, to go unchecked and unnoticed, wreaking havoc. We're going to figure out what's going on, and we're going to figure out what are the technologies that are needed to tend this place so that it supports us, which is what we need to be doing. And in many indigenous cosmologies and peoples, you find we have a certain romanticism where we say, oh, you know, the witch is the person that everyone in the community goes to for healing and rituals and to be taken care of and for all the healing, etc. And the witch is just a European form of the shaman. And I recently came across an article talking about a I believe it was a new music band, Chicano Mexican music band that was called, you know, like Las Brujas. And the witches. And what the person was saying, the young woman, she was saying that she feels that the term bruja is denigrated because of patriarchy, and that it's patriarchy that took this very powerful word and turned it into something very, very horrible. You know, bruja, witch, someone who does evil. And she was involved in a reclaiming of that word. And I understand the reclaiming part, because that is something that we see in neo-paganism a lot. We see it really in lots of minority cultures and religions. This idea that a word that has been used to denigrate and harm is being reclaimed and is now being seen as a term of power. We find it specifically in the term witch. And even in the term warlock, there are male witches who use the term warlock, and they feel that they are reclaiming a denigrated word from European tradition to express who they feel they really are. And they are saying, you know, I am a healer. I might also, you know, do harm, but I have a sense of ethics and justice, and I'm reclaiming this word from the fire. So I understand that. However, once we leave the new world, new American context, it's not the same thing. And this young woman who was talking about reclaiming bruja from the patriarchy is, I believe, incorrect. Because in an indigenous context, including, you know, sort of Mexican indigenous context, it's not that there was brujas and brujos and brujo is okay now. It's that there's brujas, there's brujos, and there's curanderas and curanderos and chamans and other kinds of medicine people. And what separates these people, what makes them different, is not that they're doing necessarily different kinds of work. They're almost all working with the same technologies. They're working with spell work. They're working magic, they're working with plants, they have helping spirits and familiars they're working with. The difference between these people is that one of them has an obligation that is tied to the heart, whereas the others do not. And we see this again and again and again around the world. And it is something that we need to understand, that in our reclaiming of these terms, and yes, we should, let's reclaim that which we feel serves us. But we have to understand that we're missing a piece of the puzzle if we think that everyone's just doing the same thing and they're all just synonyms for each other. They are not. In the Dogara culture, for instance, Maladomo Sumay, he talks about various kinds of medicine people, that there are diviners and midwives and people who are sort of holding a shamanic role, and there are witches. And he does not hold, when he, in his writings, Maladoma Sommei, author of many books, check them out, they're amazing. He's a Dogra elder living in the United States. He does not say the witches are also these people who are holding a shamanic medicine role, you know, the end. He delineates them because they're in a separate category. It's not because the witches are bad, but because the witches in that culture are not beholden to do good. And good is not even the best word, really. The witches in that culture are not beholden to serve the community. We see this again and again and again and again. That there are people who are working with the same technologies, and some of them are doing it, working with these technologies, working with spell work, trance, ritual. Some of them are doing it and are compelled to ask again and again and again, is what I'm doing serving all life? And if not, what needs to be done to serve all life? And that's not easy. Because that means that if a person comes to you that has been actively worked against by another spirit worker, and you know, their health is on the line, their finances are on the line, their life is on the line, it could mean that the easiest thing to do is to simply grab a weapon, a spiritual weapon of some kind, and cause harm and defeat the other person. And maybe that's what's necessary. Maybe that's the only option. But is it? Because it rarely is. And that person who is in that shamanic role, or curandera, or curandera, curandero role, is being compelled to ask that question. Is this what's necessary? What are going to be the long-term ramifications of this? Does this action serve all life? Whereas the witch, the brujo, the bruja, does not have the same compelling on them. It's not bound to spirits that are requiring such questions. They are not tied to spirits who are intimately connected to their heart and the decisions that are made based on their heart. This is why we see stories of shamans and curanderas and curanderos and people holding a shamanic role around the world dying if their heart gets too polluted, if they begin to do too much malefica, too much bad magic, too much mal, because their spirits might leave them, whereas the witch might not be working with spirits who care about the heart at all. They don't care about the heart, about the community. They just want their offerings. They just want power. They just like the feeling of power. Not saying that working with the familiars is bad, but to continue to hold these different roles and these different impulses and ways of being compelled in the same category doesn't serve us, and it also makes us miss something that is very, very, very key. The heart, because really, obviously, it's not that the witch doesn't have to focus on their heart, it's that the witch doesn't have to focus on her heart because her life isn't on the line. When the truth is that we all have to focus on the heart because our whole lives, all of our lives, are on the line here. So, this isn't to say that we are bereft of heart technologies. And many of our heart technologies, I mean spiritual heart technologies in the West, are actually based on indigenous technologies regarding the heart as well. And some of those are very, very easy. Some of those are as simple as Are you taking care of yourself? Are you loving yourself? Have you been to a beautiful place lately? Have you experienced awe? I was looking yesterday. There was, obviously, I say every episode I spend a lot of time on the internet, and I'm not going to back down from it. I do. And apparently there's this ongoing meme conversation going on right now about things that make my wife cry. And it's this guy, he's like, oh, my wife, she cries every 5 seconds at everything. A dog passes by, she's crying. We read something online, she's crying. I held her hand unexpectedly, she's crying. And what it did was it opened up, you know, a bevy of responses and all these people saying, you know, what makes them or someone they love cry at the drop of a hat. And this little girl, not a little girl, a young woman, posted, I was just crying last night because I love the spirit of Christmas just so much. And I felt it. Not everything, but some of these things you can actually feel in your body, in the area of your heart. I felt this thing in my heart go, really? Come on. Come on. Get it together. Really? And I heard the... And so it go through my whole, you know, my mind, go from my heart to my mind. It went, oh, this overprivileged person, you just love the Christmas spirit so much. When have you suffered? What pain have you experienced? That's so silly. People are dying out here. And I caught myself, and I was like, whoa, dude, really? She's talking about awe. She's talking about expressing awe. That there's this time of community and ritual and coming together that just recenters her. And I thought, wow, what a moment of heartlessness. I got to check myself on that. And that's what I mean, at least in part, when I'm talking about heartlessness and the heart. And there are times when we feel not only heart, when we act heartless, feel heartless, be heart, you know, are heartless, but when we feel justified in our heartlessness. And that's probably some of the most dangerous times in our life. Because in that moment, my heartlessness was coming from a place of self-righteousness around issues of justice and what I, you know, assume to be privilege and well-being. I mean, I don't know this young woman. She appeared to be from certain demographics. But there was a seemingly justified heartlessness that crept up in me that I quickly had to check and tend to more deeply. And it is because of heartlessness that we back up with justifications that we find ourselves having the conversation that we're having right now around Syrian refugees. And we find ourselves having in a bunch of other places in our lives. So the heart needs to be healed, but the heart also needs to be protected, but not via the ways that we usually think. Often we protect the heart by putting up walls or attacking others. When heart protection is actually something a little bit different. So one of the technologies that we have around the heart, aside from take good care of yourself, experience awe, experience ritual, love each other, receive, be great at receiving love, be great at receiving affection and intimacy, etc., it's alignment that we find in various, especially various neo-witchcraft traditions in the United States, this idea of alignment. That the heart, which, again, is, I keep saying we need to refocus it. I'm not saying that it's the only thing we need to have in focus. We have a mind for a reason. God blessed us with it. We should use it. We also have a gut. And the gut, in some traditions, is also often tied in with the sexual organs. To discuss an area of the body that's sometimes called the fetch, or the, I believe it's sometimes called the fetch, it could be wrong there, but sort of the area of our body that has to do with our base senses, It's the area of our body that's most connected to our physical body and our physical well-being, our physical desires and our physical interests, our desire for food, sex, comfort, belonging, safety, family. And then we have the heart, which sort of is usually given an area of its own because it's that important. And then we have the mind. And the mind is not just the mind, but the mind is connected to our higher self, our connection to our own divinity, our connection to the divine. And in many witchcraft traditions, we find practices that are about aligning these three energies, the above in ourselves, our heart, and our inner below, so that we're operating from a place where these energies are working together on our behalf. At least in one of my witchcraft traditions, they actually are about being aligned in the heart. And we use the imagery of a serpent with a star on its forehead. Because obviously without the mind, then our base self just runs rampant. And we might just be entirely self-focused without any, care for anyone else. But we might also be self-focused in the extent that it harms us and our higher will. I mean, we all have the experience of, I want something from, that's 3 months from now, but I can't get it because I want this thing right now. I want to finish this report by the end of the week, but I really want to go just sleep with a bunch of people tonight. So, we're always struggling between the immediate and the long-term, getting our personal sort of baser ambitions met as well as our higher ambitions met. So that's related. But at the same time, if we are someone who is all high-minded and interested in all the world's thoughts and theories and wisdom and traditions, etc., that's all great. What about acting on it? What about living it? What about living that life? That requires a body. That requires a grounded experience of those higher ideas. So we have this meeting between the higher and the below, and the meeting of those in this particular tradition that I operate in is in the heart. That the heart is the place where these energies need to be aligned with one another. And it's not a ritual, but it's an exercise that we do pretty often, as often as possible. And I remember the first time I did it, 90 years ago, the first thing I felt before the word became an important word in my vocabulary, the first thing I felt was, oh my God, I feel so authentic right now. And even when I do it today, there's still a recentering, a re-authenticating of myself that takes place when I use that particular technology. Another technology that we find around the heart is found in the Taoist tradition. And the Taoist tradition talks about the heart as not a single place, but a place that actually is split into at least two parts, an inner and an outer. And the inner area of the heart is called the Ling, and the outer area of the heart is called the Shen. And I, again, am not an expert on these, but I have had to explore them in my own life and in my work. But what the Ling is it is the innermost part of the heart, and it's very quiet. It's active. It's related to our heart's medicine, to what we're able to give in the world, to who we are in the world. But it speaks with a very small voice. Whereas the Shen is the outer covering of the heart. More warrior-esque in a way. Almost like the Ling is the queen in our heart And the Shen is the warrior who takes that queen's message and carries it out into the world in a form of expression. The Ling and the Shen. And I remember I actually, not too long ago, had a shamanic session with a client. And by shamanic session, I mean the session was specifically focused on shamanic journey work. And it's very interesting for me because I'm used to being shown the heart four chambers, which I'll get into a moment. I'm used to one of my helping spirits flying with me into one of the heart's four chambers to resolve some energies there. And it looked like we were going somewhere in the map of that person's heart that I was familiar with, just in terms of my understanding of the heart's four chambers. And my spirits were saying, no, we're not going there. We're not going into the west chamber of the heart. That's where you think we're going, but we're not going there. And I actually had to call on one of my helping spirits who helped me to see in the dark. And I was sort of saying, so where are we going? And they took me into the center of the heart. And I was like, all right, really got to just suspend all assumptions here. We're going where we got to go. And they take me to this client's Ling, that looked in the journey like a very small woman with a cushion. And she's sort of just sitting there, and I'm asking, hey, my spirits have brought me to you, Ling of my client's heart. What's going on? And she just whispered, I want to be heard. I want to be heard. And I turned to my helping spirits and I asked, what's going on? Why is this very, very vital part of this client in such disarray? Why are they having a hard time being heard? And I was brought to a soul part of this young woman. There's an experience that this young woman had early childhood in which her father kind of said, a father, older male authority, said something to her that had such a ramification that it shut her down. It just shut her down so intensely up until this point that we were meeting. And my spirit showed me all of these times in her life where this client almost literally would cover her mouth to not speak. And that there was an entire issue of lack of self-expression that was going on that wasn't just the more acute lack of self-expression that we might find in, say, like a throat chakra issue, the throat chakra being not just related to the voice, but related to our expression of ourselves in the world. That's being big in the world and how far our voice reaches. But truly a deep lack of self-expression. And I brought the soul part back, and where I brought it back to was directly to the Ling in this young woman's heart. And when I brought it back, they hugged, and her Ling just, like, dramatically fell onto this cushion, just in this expression of exhaustion, because no one was hearing her. And she wasn't being able to express herself. And this peace that was, you know, in this young woman's heart was not being able to do her job. No matter how much she was yelling or screaming or running or jumping out, who knows what she had been doing in there that whole time. So understanding that, I find that the Taoist cosmology of understanding the Ling and the Shen to be another very, very helpful concept regarding the heart. Because with that concept, we can use any number of tools that we've cultivated to explore that. We can go into our heart and speak to our Ling and find out, are you getting what you need? Are you, what do you need, you know? We can talk to our Shen and say, are you getting what you need? Are you well connected to my Ling? Because there's so many energies that can get caught up in that relationship and can cut us off from that, from early childhood wounds to all kinds of, you know, traumas, various things that can cut us off from our own medicine, and then we're moving through life in a heartless manner. And by heartless, it's not just about being kind or nice, but as we're seeing, we're talking about, is my heart working? Can I do with, can it do what it needs to do? Not just am I taking in refugees, but am I healing easily? Do I have the courage to face another day? Am I giving to myself? Am I being all of me? Again, it's not just about kindness and generosity when we're talking about the heart and heartlessness. But the Taoist cosmology regarding these is particularly helpful. And when we come back, we'll be talking about another cosmology regarding the heart that's particularly of interest to me.
Talking to the lama, singing to the lama, being to the lama, high up, oh, to the lama, when I die, oh, being to the lama, singing to the lama, shouting to the lama, praying to the lama, high up, oh, to the lama, when I die, when I get down to the river, I'm gonna stick my sword in the sand. By the old ship of Zion, she took a minute to the promised land. Way over in Beulah, so bad I ain't no die there. Well, the saints shot in victory, oh, they're singing off everywhere. Way over in Beulah, I have voice of friends I've known.
LMC Radio Network, whose art and information may be found on its webcast shows. The LMC Radio Network is a community radio alliance of metaphysical, spiritual, inspirational, and political justice broadcasters spanning a wide range of topics. Tune in Sundays for the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, hosted by Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ali. It features panel discussions on traditional African-American hoodoo spellcasting with members of the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, plus free readings and magical rootwork advice for live call-in clients. The longest-running conjure show in the universe, it may be heard from 3 o'clock to 4:30 Pacific Time, Sunday afternoons. On Mondays, get ready for Candelo's Corner, starring Candelo Cambisa. This is the meeting place for all esoteric traditions. Candelo brings his insight as a Polero and eclectic spiritualist to his interviews with peers in Afro-Caribbean lineages, as well as representatives of numerous other spiritualities and religions. You can hear Candelo's Corner Monday evenings from 5 to 7 Pacific Time. Tuesdays feature two wonderful shows to suit your taste. On the Crystal Silence League Hour, John St. Germain provides spiritual guidance and tips on the practical use of crystals and crystal balls. His show starts at 5 p.m. Pacific Time and lasts for 1 hour. Next is In the Streets with Beverly Smith. Beverly provides up-to-the-minute reports on civil and social rights issues. Her one-hour show airs on Tuesday evenings at 6 p.m. Pacific Time. On Wednesday nights, Kai Arman broadcasts On Sacred Ground, a tapestry of our times comprising history, ethnography, and shamanism, featuring the voices of the land and the deceased, aided by scholars, spirit workers, and environmentalists. Kai's show airs from 5 to 7 Pacific Time. On Thursdays, it's the Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield. In a variety show laced with country wit and biblical wisdom, the professor shares his knowledge of roots, delivers the lucky numbers, and explores the secrets of scriptural sorcery. From 6 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Time, there's no end to the surprises. And on Saturday nights, come out and join Liquid Libations. Andrea Weston hosts this informal sharing and showcasing of poetry, short stories, and spoken word performances contributed by novices and professional wordsmiths. Call in and read your work. Liquid Libations may be heard on Saturday nights from 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific Time. All shows on the LMC Radio Network are sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company, located in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com. Add 3 hours for Eastern, tax and license may apply, train departure times and Burma shave signs subject to change without notice. LMC.
Lucky Mojo Curio Company is based in sunny Forestville, California, and provides traditional spiritual products for remediating all kinds of conditions. Locate them online at luckymojo.com or visit them in person to see the world's smallest church, Missionary Independent Spiritual. I'm Kai Armand, and this is On Sacred Ground. Today we've been talking about the heart, various cosmologies around the world regarding the heart, and technologies for the heart, how we can heal the heart. And we might actually have to carry this into another episode at some point. But one of the cosmologies I wanted to talk about in regards to the heart is found in the book The Fourfold Way, written by Angelus Arian. And this cosmology of the heart is what I was actually talking about earlier when I was talking about the four chambers of the heart as I know them, because this sort of four-chambered heart shows up in the cosmology of the Last Mask community and the teachings of the Last Mask community as led by Christina Pratt. And what you find in the Fourfold Way by Angelus Arian is that the heart is looked at in four addictions. And those addictions are the addiction to intensity, the addiction to perfection, the addiction to knowledge, and the addiction to focusing on what's not working. And, you know, I take that back. I'm not sure if Angelus Arian actually ascribed these addictions to the heart, but in the Last Mask cosmology, we actually do ascribe these four addictions to the heart. And we see them in the chambers of the heart that are actually associated with each direction. So the east of chamber of our heart, which is associated with vision, our heart's ability to see, ahead, to see what's actually happening. And in the east is this addiction to focusing on what's not working. If that area of our heart is out of alignment, that's the addiction that might be playing out there. And that's profound to me, to that focusing on what's not working can limit our vision versus focusing on what is working. And in the south chamber of our heart is associated with fire and associated with love and fullness. We call it the full heart. And when this area of our heart is in alignment, we might find ourselves having an addiction to intensity. which makes a lot of sense because in this idea, we have this saying in the United States called, you know, stop and smell the roses. When our life's going too fast, you're working too hard, etc. But it brings up the question, what if you can't smell the roses? What if the roses are not enough? What if there is something that has cut you off? Or what if you've cut yourself off from the inherent beauty of the world? What if a rose smells less like a rose? What if you are limited in your capacity to fully grasp, fully receive, fully be with the beauty and love that exists? Well, then you're going to be trying to make up for that. Hence, addiction to intensity. And in the West Chamber of the Heart, associated with the element water, and associated with wisdom, the wise heart, our heart's innate wisdom, our ability to take that which we have experienced in life and alchemize those experiences into actual wisdom for ourselves. If that's been limited, then you'll be finding yourself in the addiction to the need to know, because you'll never have full access to your own inner knowing. So addiction to the need to know can show up as always looking for more information before being able to make a decision, always looking to others for answers, always jumping from one spiritual tradition to another spiritual tradition to another spiritual tradition, from one teacher to another teacher to another teacher, rather than fully committing to a teacher, melding what you are receiving that from that teacher with your own inner wisdom until that experience is played out. And we see all these addictions played out everywhere, all the time, in our lives, in the world around us. And one way we sort of categorize that in our cosmology at the Last Mask community is by seeing it in the West Chamber of the Heart as an addiction to the need to know. And in the North Chamber of our heart, which is associated with power, our heart's power, the powerful heart, our ability to act, not just our ability, but our ability to act powerfully. And what we find that limited by, or the sort of the dis-ease, the addiction in that heart, that area of the heart, is actually the addiction to perfection. That a misunderstanding of what is needed, of what is being asked of us, can lead to a thwarting of our power. And it's almost like we would expect that an area of the heart regarding power would require perfection, but there's no such thing as perfection. So therefore, that is a thwarting of true power, especially if power needs to be wielded and used, then rather than chasing perfection, we're kind of fucking ourselves up trying to chase something that doesn't exist. That's extremely dangerous. And in this article by Eden Philpott of therealcenter.org, I'm not too familiar with the organization, but they in this article at therealcenter.org, they sort of well summarize this conversation that Angelus Arian is having in the fourfold way. Specifically, with this addiction to perfection, the article writer says, this appears when true excellence is misunderstood and true power is unrealized. When all four parts of our heart are online in this particular cosmology, we call it the courageous heart. When our heart is full, when our heart is powerful, when our heart is wise, and when our heart is clear, clear seeing, then we have the courageous heart. Then our heart, free of these addictions, even though it's an ever-tending that's needed, then our heart can do the work it's supposed to do. And the courageous heart enables us to do so many of the things that we say we want in life without understanding what's getting in the way of us doing it or having it. It's the courageous heart that enables us to choose to love again when we're heartbroken. It's the courageous heart that enables us to get back on that project that we were working on, that we stopped time and time again, because we're going to get at it one more time, knowing that the only true failure is quitting. It's the courageous heart that enables us to be vulnerable and intimate when we've lost love in the past. It's the courageous heart that enables us to reach for our dreams and that passion of ours, no matter what the odds seem to be. It's the courageous heart that enables us to take in those who need to be taken in spite of fears about the past. It's the courageous heart that enables us to recenter ourselves and our own needs in a world that has told us that we are not worth it, and our own needs and impulses are not worthwhile. The heart can be broken, and the heart can be mended, and it is the heart that has its own medicine for mending itself. The heart knows what it needs to heal. And if we can listen to that still small voice that is our heart, we might find that we have more than enough courage to do those things that have been on our heart to do and face another day in a way that serves life. Take on another day in a way that serves life. So this has been another episode of On Sacred Ground with your host, Kai Armand. Tune in next week as we continue to go deep into the heart of the human experience and which place plays a primary role. Until then, keep a light in your window for courage in our times. I'll be keeping a light in mind. Thank you.